Welcome to the RSA Events Podcast, the home of world-changing ideas and debate.
So, welcome everybody to the 2019 RSA Student Design Awards. Such an exciting evening. I'm Gabby DeRosa, and I am delighted to be here and to say that I was actually an award winner just last year. So it's quite crazy for me right now, standing on this stage, when I remember exactly how it feels to be you guys sat over there. I think it was maybe three rows in, two seats on the right, just filled with joy about being here tonight. But I really need to take this moment in, because I haven't always been confident about talking about my creative ability or about my ideas, and taking part in the Student Design Awards really helped me with this. At school, I had a really encouraging teacher. They really started my design journey and showed me the potential of design and really gave me that initial confidence to pursue it at university. And then at university, my perspective really started to shift. I started to realise the potential of design as a tool for change, and I started learning about social design. But at university, when I was coming to the end, I was still a bit unsure about what path to take. And for me, I was in a little bit of a creative bubble. I was surrounded by teachers and tutors and classmates that all understood my creative thinking. However, I was a bit worried and a bit nervous about how my ideas would be translated into the real world and if other people would value them. So when I graduated, I really wanted to test my ideas. And that's when I decided to enter the Student Design Awards. So I entered a brief called Wearing Intelligence 2.0. It was all about using advanced textiles to improve the quality of people's lives. And I was drawn to this brief because it spoke a lot about embedding technologies within fabric. However, I wanted to use my interest in biodesign and embed nature within fabric. So that's when I kind of came up with my idea, Interweave, which was an advanced textile interlaced with plants. So I submitted my boards like you guys, and then I was completely shocked, over the moon, really happy, but so shocked to find out I'd been shortlisted and invited for an interview. And I think this was because, just for some reason, I didn't really feel like I deserved it. But I'm so thankful for the judges for seeing something in my project. So fast forward a few months and I came here to this amazing building for my interview. And I was so nervous. I remember arriving with my portfolio, all my little prototypes, waiting in the waiting room like you guys have. Going through my cue cards, and then I remember the judges welcoming me, some of them are here tonight again, and introducing themselves, and then being like, right, it's over to you. And that was my time to kind of talk about my project and explain it a bit more to them. And I can honestly say it's the first and only time I've come out of an interview or a presentation and I felt like I couldn't do anymore. And even at that point in my journey, irrespective of the competition outcome, I'd already developed as a designer and grown in confidence. So then, to find out I'd won was absolutely incredible. I remember exactly where I was. I was at my friend Kate's house, and we were actually watching the royal wedding of Meghan and Harry. And I was surrounded by friends, and my sister was there. And I just randomly thought, I'm going to check my emails. And there it was, telling me that I was a winner. And if I'm honest, there were some tears of joy, but not just from me, from some other people. And it was so nice in that moment to be surrounded by people that cared about me and my journey. But I was just so happy, not that I'd won the award, but this range of people from different industries, this expert panel of seasoned designers, believed in my idea and valued my project. And All of this has really encouraged me to pursue what I'm passionate about. And working on a Student Design Award brief is really challenging, but for me, it showed me that I'm really interested in social design. And actually, looking back, I think I've always been a social designer. I just didn't realise it. So since then, it's been an amazing 12 months leading up to this point, from an incredibly valuable internship at Cnedfort down in Bristol, to actually ending up here on this stage, working within the design team as a junior designer at the RSA, delivering Student Design Award briefs this year. And I never would have been here or developed as a designer without the Student Design Awards. So what I'd really like to say to all the winners this year is, this is just the beginning. So many opportunities are going to come your way. And I, for one, I'm just so excited to see where this takes you all. And I'm just really looking forward to hearing about each and every one of your journeys from now and into the future. So if everyone could, with me, give a massive round of applause for our SDA 2019 award winners.
Hello. People like Gabby are the very reason that we're here, right? It's amazing. Gabby winning a design award has launched her onto a trajectory that for her was unimaginable a year ago. I think it's incredibly brave for a winner from only a year ago who was on the stage receiving an award to be a year later standing on and talking to you guys. So I think she deserves another round of applause. And your jumpsuit looks great. So good evening, everybody. I'm Andrea Kershaw, and I'm an RSA trustee, and welcome to Designing Our Futures. We're here to celebrate 2019 award winners and to also hear from a past winner about her own journey since winning an award as a student. But before, somebody's got to do the practicals. I've got the practicals job. Mobile phones, are we all switched to silent? Live streaming tonight, so say hello and welcome to everybody. And a reminder that the hashtag for tonight's event is for the RSA Design, and our handle is at RSA Design Awards if you want to get involved in Twitter. That's it on the practicals. We've got a great evening ahead, taught by designer the lovely Kate, who won an RSA award in 2002, so we're going to go back some time, and is now planning leader for the City of Melbourne. After that, we're going to present this year's awards. I've had the privilege of spending the afternoon with the winners, which has been awesome. Love these guys. Talented, humble, fun, really great afternoon. And they've designed some really amazing solutions. After the awards ceremony, we'll go downstairs for some booze and to toast our winners. So that's not bad. Back to the present. In case you're wondering, who's that lady up on stage? I know she's an RSA trustee, but so what? Who is she? I'll share a little bit. If you're wondering what the RSA is about, what the Student Designs Awards are about, and who's supporting all this, I'm just going to take a few moments to share that. First off, I'm proud to say I am a designer. Had the privilege of spending over a decade at IDEO, which is a global design and innovation firm where I was a partner, which was fab. Travelled the world, working with private public sector from redesigning immigration in Singapore to setting up a design-led movement in the UAE to improve the lives of people in the region. My thrill of design has not diminished over the years. In fact, quite the reverse. I get more passionate as time goes by. And the very nature of design has evolved so much over the years. So, you know, I started IDEO in 2006, and there were only two consultancies in the UK doing service design. That was IDEO and a great consultancy called LiveWork. And it's unimaginable now. It's completely ubiquitous, service design. Now it's everywhere. So once we were associated with just making things beautiful, we've now become a serious player in solving some of the biggest challenges we all face. And our award winners this evening offer a fabulous showcase of the breadth of applicability of design. So 2019, and we're all at the big boys' table now of business and governments, which is awesome. However, I have noticed that some things don't change. We still want to produce beautiful design. So no designer I know can bear ugly design. It's just not a thing. So it appears that we can all evolve as designers, but changing our DNA is quite another matter. But we all do want to drive relevant design solutions to the emerging needs of people, and it gets me out of bed every morning. RSA, many of you will know. So the RSA, we explore the big challenges facing the world today and support innovative ideas and solutions to tackle them. And as the issues we face are more complex than ever before, from health crises to economic insecurity to climate change, we need to come up with creative ways of solving these problems. We see a huge opportunity for design at the RSA in helping us to achieve this. And the RSA Student Design Awards, it's a global competition for higher education students and recent graduates, focused around a set of project briefs that challenge participants to generate solutions through design thinking. Got a truly great breadth of design challenges this year, from how we design ways to transform emergency healthcare, reimagine train stations, or enable citizens to shape the decisions that affect them. These are just some of the challenges posed by the 10 design briefs this year. As many of you know, the RSA is an independent charity, and all these briefs have been developed in collaboration with a diverse mix of partners. Our entire programme is made possible by the support of these organisations who share our belief that good design can have a wider and more impactful role in the world. Very proud to be working with all of them and to have so many representatives from these organisations here tonight. I'd like to say a massive thank you to all of you. Before we kick off, I'd also like to extend a huge thank you to the judges, friends, colleges, universities, individual educators, and last but by no means least, there is an enormous team in people of RSA who have worked slavishly to get us here tonight, so a huge thank you to those. So thank you to everybody that's contributed. So as Matthew said earlier, the 95th year of the RSA Student Design Awards, and I felt like he did that. Oh, it's older than me. Great. remarkable feat. And there's an amazing legacy of thousands of people and ideas that have emerged from this competition and gone on to create massive impact in the world. The alumni spans many generations, disciplines, sectors across the globe, and we're thrilled to have Kate Dundas here this evening, all the way from Australia, can I just say, to share her journey since winning an RSA Student Design Award. Kate is a landscape architect, strategic planner, and urban designer with over 10 years of local and international experience in designing and delivering planning and design projects. She is currently team leader of City Plans for the City of Melbourne. Kate holds a Master's of Landscape Architecture and Master's of Urban Design, along with an honours degree in industrial design. She's quite clever, I think, we can assume. She co-hosts Greening the Apocalypse, which scares and inspires her, and co-founded 3,000 Acres, a project aiming to get more people growing more food in more places, and Five Up, Five Down, a project to tackle social isolation. So I would love and all welcome Kate to the stage.
Hi. I was able to do all of those university courses because it was free in Scotland in the 90s. It's very lucky. Can't believe I'm standing here tonight. It's absolutely brilliant to be here. So thank you, RSA, for asking me. It's just such a pleasure and privilege to be back in London. I don't think we've been here, it's my husband, for 10 years. And it's quite overwhelming to arrive back in London. It's so exciting and big. I've got this earring that keeps hooking onto my jacket, so I'm trying to keep my head forward. 2002, I won an award at the RSA, and I totally remember that feeling of being really nervous and coming down to London. I remember going to Topshop and buying this special belt, because I was like, need to look really cool. So, and I remember waiting in the waiting room and just being so nervous, but I have to thank the RSA for putting out a really well-considered, interesting set of briefs over all of these years. because winning this award pivoted my career from product design, which I wasn't terribly good at, to landscape architecture, which is my home and something I feel very comfortable and privileged to be doing. So my project was called Less Crime Through Community Ownership. And it was all about getting the community involved in designing their local places. And that project is really what got me interested in landscape architecture. And I'm still doing that kind of work today. Part of the award was a travel scholarship. I got £2,000 to go traveling. So I went traveling around the world and visited all of these really interesting places and learned about different ways that people can live and different projects and things that people can do that impact the day-to-day life. One place I went was this Shaker Village in America, and I learned about this simpler way of living and about furniture design and interesting things like that. I went to Arcole Santi, which was an architect's vision about how we could live differently. It was all about really living very close together and making sure that you could have enough agricultural land around you to support your self-sufficient way of living. And then I went to Meliodora, which was just outside Melbourne, and learned about permaculture from David Holmgren, who is one of the co-founders of this different way of living, all about getting back to the land and living in a kind of more self-sustaining way. And that's been a major influence and impact on my life and my design since then. So this is very indulgent talking about my career. Thank you for letting me do it. After this travel bursary, I discovered this thing called landscape architecture after working in industrial design and furniture design. And I worked as a landscape architect in Northern England on lots of interesting projects, one of which was this, the Bradford Mirror Pool, which I like to call the Bradford Miracle, which was a transformational project in the heart of Bradford. And it was a really interesting project in that it brought together very disparate communities and made this really fascinating, interesting social mix that was really successful. And I don't know if some of you guys have been there, but it's still very successful today. I did lots of random other things, like a couple of gardens at Chelsea Flower Show. This was the rhubarb custard and crumble garden, celebrating all things Yorkshire. And this was the Barbara Hepworth garden. So just really cool things, lovely design ideas where you could really get into the detail of things, like dry stone walling and learning about plants. So I did lots of different things like that in the UK. And then we decided to go traveling and ended up in Australia and living in Melbourne, kind of by mistake. It was my sister was living there, Dan's sister was living there, and we ended up staying. 9 years later, we're still there. So it wasn't at all by plan. I spent the last couple of years thinking about what's important to me and thinking about my own personal values. And I think it's these three things: community, equity, and joy. And I like to make sure that my designs and the projects that I'm working on for the city really embody those things and enable people to live equitable, fair, joyful lives. Now, for me, that means growing my food in my front garden, because I get to know my neighbours and build community that way. It means making sure people have access to open space. So when my team's planning for new parts of the city of Melbourne, we try to make sure that people are able to access open space, access the stuff that they need to live good lives. And my electric bike is the thing that's bringing me joy at the moment. And I like to make sure in my work that I can design movement networks that enable people to move safely around to the places that they need to go without getting in their cars. So I'm going to talk tonight about designing cities. And I've split it into two, the hardware and the software of cities. And I think design, when it comes to, well, everything, is not just a nice to have. It's not just an add-on. It's fundamentally important to living a good life and doing things really well and creating social justice. So when I talk about the hardware, what do I mean? I mean all this stuff of the cities, the streets, the parks, open spaces, the buildings, the stuff that's really hard to change and takes a long time to change. So I work at the City of Melbourne. It's been the world's most livable city, I think, for the last 8 years. I think we got knocked off last year by Vienna or somewhere, which the mayor was not happy about. And one of the big challenges that we're facing at the moment is managing population growth. So we're expecting to double in population over the next 10 years. nothing like London. We talk about overcrowding, and then you come here and it's like, oh, come on, Melbourne, it's all right. So we have an influx of 1 million people a day, but that's about to explode to 1.5 million over the next wee while. So how do we manage that? We need to think now about how to design the future city, to design out problems that we're intending, that we will see, overcrowding, making sure there's enough infrastructure, and dealing with climate change. So our footpaths are really overcrowded, and they're becoming more and more overcrowded as time goes on. We've got competition for space, as you will know, you're in London. So we're designing streets differently to make sure that people have priority over vehicles. I think this is Little Bourke Street, and at the moment it's got vehicles along it, and we're trying to work out how to be fairer in the allocation of space. I think in Spencer Street, which is another of the main thoroughfares through the city of Melbourne, there's something like 800 pedestrian movements for every one vehicle movement. But the allocation of space is about 70% dedicated to cars. So we need to just rethink that. And we're using a lot of data to convince traffic engineers and other people that there needs to be a rethink about equity on the city streets. And when it comes to reallocation of road space to people space, this project's really interesting. Sorry about the terrible quality of this picture, but this is in Korea. And they've ripped up the freeway and built this park, which just shows you what's possible. You know, dust takes good, well-considered design to do this. We're experiencing a population boom and much higher density living than what people are used to in Melbourne. So there's lots of tower blocks going up. So we're now thinking at the council, how do we deal with that at ground level? How do we protect the public life of the streets? Because tall buildings can bring density, which can bring vibrancy, but tall buildings can also impact the quality of the streets. And we end up with things like this, which doesn't bring community, joy, equity. This is what people love about Melbourne, the intricacy, the details, the laneways, the stuff going on. So we're working through policy, advocacy, design thinking and tactics to make sure that we're able to retain the stuff that people love about Melbourne and don't end up giving really valuable public space over to blank walls and over to cars. Something else we're looking at is making sure that we've got enough infrastructure. So there's a book called Palaces for the People by Eric Klinenberg. There's a gorgeous quote from it. The future of democratic societies rests not simply on shared values, which of course are very important, but also on shared spaces. So the places that are free, that we can all go to, public spaces, parks, libraries, things like that. And this is an example of something in the city that we're trying to make sure it's really, really difficult to build community assets into the city, especially freestanding ones like this library. This is a library in one of the newer areas of the city of Melbourne in Docklands. And Docklands was built 15 or so years ago, or at least started to be finished then, with no community assets, no infrastructure. And the community kept asking, you know, what's happening? Where do we meet? Where do we go that's free? We don't want to, what do we do? So the Docklands Library was retrofitted into it, and it's become this amazing gathering space and just shows the importance of these democratic places that you can go to for free and meet each other. It's got ping pong tables and recording studios that you can hire out, and it's just a wonderful gathering place for the community. It's got a big public space out in front. And something else that we're doing in the city is retrofitting this really new big scale place with human scaled stuff, so that you feel as a human being comfortable in there, and it protects you from the sun and the wind. So little interventions like this, you know, community gardens, shade structures, cafes, planters, and connections to make sure that these places are connected to one another. So it's these little design interventions that should have been done first, that weren't, that we learned from the community that's what they want. So we're kind of, as a council, we're retrofitting back into the city the things that people love. One of the more pressing concerns that we're dealing with in the city at the moment is affordable housing. And I'm sure London and other places across the UK are dealing with similar issues. This is an almost full MCG, so it's a cricket ground in Melbourne. There's 85,000 people in this photo. There's 85,000 people on the public housing waiting list in Australia. 7% of them are homeless, and the rest are living in cars, on their friends' sofas, crisis accommodation. I mean, in a country like Australia, in a city like Melbourne, that just shouldn't be a fact, and unfortunately it is. So we're trying to design policy solutions and physical solutions to deal with that impact. And there's lots and lots of interesting things out there that are going on. This is a project just outside of Zurich. It's not a developer-led model, it's a housing group-led model. And they've got orphanages in here, they've got lots and lots of social housing, all mandated by a referendum. So I think there's something like a target of 33% of all homes in Zurich must be community housing owned and operated. So they're doing this really interesting stuff that's all driven by policy. So if you can design great policy, you can design great outcomes, but they also manage to design really beautiful built form as well. This is a project in Melbourne by Breathe Architecture that's again a different model. It's not developer-led, it's architect-led. So architects are collaborating with future residents and getting funding from different models to deliver more affordable housing, that's 20% in here, and different stuff happening at ground level, so lots of not-for-profits and social enterprises in there. And this is another example of a consciously designed community, which is in Melbourne too. So there's lots of opportunity to design out problems, but what you really need is government leadership and some interesting private sector stuff as well. But you can do it. It's possible. And one of the most pressing challenges that we're facing in the city is climate change and climate change adaptation. Did you see it was 68 degrees in Kuwait the other day? 68 degrees. So the city gets really, really hot, particularly, this is a heat map of the city, and the hottest places are the public places, the streets. It just gets very, very hot. So as a public agency, it's up to us to make sure that we're protecting the public from surface temperatures that are getting up towards 50 degrees Celsius. So the city is doing some really interesting work, particularly around the urban forest strategy, which is looking at all of the tree planting across Melbourne and trying to increase tree canopy cover. This has been a really great exercise, not only in adaptation and mitigation, but also in marketing. Because each tree got an email address. And originally it was supposed to be so people could report a broken limb or graffiti or whatever. But people, the public, started emailing the trees. They were like, hey, Cypress, how you doing? And they started having conversations. And it's just the most gorgeous example of community engagement. And it really helped people value trees from a really funny, gorgeous way. Dale, I got a little dehydrated on Friday. How are you? Stepping outside of the city, this is something that the David Holmgren's been working on recently. It's called retrofitting suburbia. So in Australia, or in Melbourne, we have a very dense CBD and then a very sprawling suburbia. And he's been thinking about if climate change becomes, well, when climate change becomes a big problem, how do we build resilience into the community beyond the central city? And he's looking at retrofitting suburbia. So what might a suburban block look like at different stages of life or different times of change? So how can you use your garden to grow food? How can you accommodate more than a single family into this? And how do you build joy into your life? And there's lots of people living like this now in Australia. So sharing produce and growing their own food and collaborating and living more like a commons rather than in single family units, which I think is really interesting. So onto the software of the city. This is the stuff that happens on top of the streets and in the houses and in the parks, cycling around, playing. And to be able to do that stuff, you need to have time. And what I've realized is it's very difficult to carve out time when you've got a little family and they're very demanding, or you've got a job and you're commuting. And I hate this statistic so much. This is from Australia, but Australians give $2.1 billion of unpaid hours to their employer, often without noticing. It's just habit, a little bit of overtime here, a little bit of commuting there. But that means you don't really have a lot of time to do a lot of other stuff. And there's this really interesting research that shows the links between working a lot and consuming a lot, because you feel like you deserve it. You know, you've worked really, really hard, and you think, I really deserve that shiny red suit that I saw. Or I really deserve that sandwich that's flown in from France because I worked so hard. And not only that, it doesn't leave you any time to connect to your community. And we often delegate our decisions, particularly when it comes to democracy. This is Scott Morrison, who's the current Prime Minister of Australia. He took a piece of coal into Parliament to say, don't be afraid of coal, it's fine. He got voted in again. You know, we're delegating our decisions and not thinking about it properly, not engaging with politics because the design of it's not interesting. You know, my sister's not interested. Lots of young people in Australia just didn't vote because it's not engaging. So the challenge to you guys, make politics engaging. Redesign the system. What can we do for our future to make sure that we take our future into our own hands? And this is just some impacts of consumption. So impacts of not having enough time to engage in life, to engage in home economics, to engage in doing things slightly differently. If you weighed all of the biomass in the world, not including insects, 67% of that biomass is farmed animals to feed us. 30% of that biomass is humans, and 3% only is wild animals. So we're completely changing our context. We're completely changing nature. I think we've produced enough plastic to cling film the world and enough concrete to pour 2 millimetres across the entire world. Got billions and billions of mobile phones and billions of cars. We can redesign that system. We know what to do. We just need to do it. And we need to participate more in life. And don't stop delegating our decisions to terrifying people. So I'm interested, outside of my work, in increased participation, in doing democracy differently. And I'm trying to think, I don't know what it will look like yet, but about how to try and make politics more engaging for everybody and more interesting to be involved with, how to build greater community connections and how to embrace home economics. And one of these projects is 3,000 Acres. This was another competition brief that I answered probably about 5 years ago. And the question put out by the health body in Victoria was, how do you increase the supply of fresh fruit and vegetables? Because people are getting fat and they're just eating rubbish stuff. And our answer was to make it easier for more people to grow fruit and veg. So this is a picture of me in my allotment in Yorkshire many years ago. And it's really easy in the UK if you want to grow fruit and veg that you can just go and ask your council for an allotment. There might be a waiting list, but normally you can access land. That doesn't exist in Australia. There's not that legacy of food growing. So the answer to that competition brief was to make it easier to grow fruit and veg. And to do that, it was to make it easier to access land. So we came up with this idea to build a system or a process to make it easy to access bits of land that were hanging about in Melbourne unused. And it was inspired by a project called 596 Acres in New York. So we came up with a toolkit and did a whole load of test gardens to see where all the problems were. And we've got something like 30-odd gardens across Melbourne now. And all these gorgeous stories of people meeting each other, growing heaps and heaps of food, and embracing home economics and participating more in that kind of life. This is one of the workshops we ran, some of our volunteers. And a recent project that we've just wrapped up last week was called Olives to Oil. So we're going around collecting all of the olives that are growing across Melbourne and making them into oil and then swapping them back for the olives. So lots of the olives go to waste around the place. And we're also working with Farming Concrete to make sure that we collect all of the data to make sure we know how much food you can grow in a suburban and urban context. Another project that I am trying to get off the ground at the moment is called Five Up, Five Down. I've been on maternity leave twice in the last 4 years, and I found it extremely lonely and difficult. And I began researching loneliness. And you know, you'd think with Facebook and Instagram and all this stuff in your phones that you'd be more connected and it's easy to build social connections. But it's actually really, really difficult. And we're more disconnected than ever. Even though we're connected online, physically and emotionally, we're very much more disconnected from our communities than we ever have been. And it's a big problem. It's becoming well-recognised fact that loneliness has physical problems. Do you know if you hug somebody for 20 seconds, it actually has healing properties on your body, which is so cool. Just don't go, like, hugging strangers. But internationally, loneliness is recognised as a public health issue. And 8 out of 10 Australians say that they're lonely. It's lots, isn't it? I was one of them, and I was sitting in my house with babies. They're nice, but they're a bit boring. So the idea was really, really simple. It was just about getting your neighbours over to your house. So 5 people from up the street or down the street, and 5 people from up the stairs or down the stairs, to your house or to a park, just to get to know each other and build resilience. And building resilience in communities is going to be really important when we have some climate change shocks. So things like air conditioning, for example, in Australia. If your neighbours know that you've got air conditioning and they know you, they're more likely to come over and be comfortable rather than boiling in their houses. So something that I've become more and more interested in with my job is the idea of this of radical participation in the city as a commons and how to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to cooperate, to share, to be self-empowered, and to really feel like they have a say in the future of their city. And I think that's the most important thing for public spaces to do, is to allow us to get together and to tell people what we want. And I hope in the future there will be enough public spaces to allow us to do that. Thank you.
Oh, there's an alarm. That was absolutely fabulous. Well done. That was brilliant. I actually love London, but with you in charge, I'm thinking about moving to Melbourne now. It sounds fabulous. But I can't get out of my mind the rhubarb and custard garden. It's so genius. I think you might want to bring that idea back for Melbourne. So thank you very much, Kate. That was great. So now, with no further ado, I'm delighted to announce the 2019 award winners for the evening. The winners we're announcing tonight were selected through a rigorous 2-stage judging process where every single piece of work entered is reviewed anonymously by a panel of judges brought together for their expertise around the topic brief. A shortlist of finalists is created, and those finalists then meet the judges to pitch their project and discuss their design process. Winners were chosen after extensive jury deliberations. So they've really been put through the paces and absolutely earned the right to be here tonight. Before I announce the winners, I'd like to tell everybody about the awards we're handing out to the students. So we've got Stepping Stone Awards, designed by Robert Levien, Royal Designer for Industry and longtime friend and supporter of the RSA. Huge thank you. These awards were inaugurated in 2014 to celebrate the 90th anniversary of the RSA Student Design Awards programme, and we continue that tradition tonight. Robin designed the award to commemorate the moment our winners take that big step and start their careers as designers for social impact. Without further ado, the winners. I'll read out a brief overview of each of the winning projects, and then let's give a huge round of applause for the winner as they're walking up on stage to collect their award. Kate. In her treat red suit over here. So the first brief, circular emergency brief was sponsored by Philips with additional in-kind support from the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. It asked students to design a product, service or system that uses circular design principles to make emergency medical care more effective. And the winners are, and I'm going to pronounce it correctly, Moira. Moira Kane and Hannah Grogan from the National College of Art and Design, Dublin, for Personal Patient Pack, PPP. It's a product pack that facilitates medical devices to stay with the patient and be reused throughout their healthcare journey, reducing waste by 67%. The jury applauded the professional level of Moira and Hannah's design research, stakeholder engagement and pitch. They said it's a wonderfully simple solution that reduces high volumes of waste and can easily be implemented. In fact, it's already being tested and getting traction in England and Ireland. Well done, guys. Second brief, Grand Station Designs. For the brief Grand Stations Designs, sponsored by Network Rail, asking students to design a way to reinvigorate and or repurpose an ageing commuter train station building utilising its existing structures and resources. We have one winner, Sophie Kane. Sophie's from Norwich University for Arts for Create Together, a community design project including a creative workshop kit for local groups and a station exhibition using materials relevant to the town's heritage to bring the community, commuters and train station closer together. Judges praised the outstanding quality of Sophie's work, from her research and prototyping through to her execution, commercial awareness and pitching skills. They commented that her solution is stunning, full of magic and breathtakingly thorough. Network Rail is now working with Sophie to pilot her proposal with a station in Scotland, so watch this space for updates. Great. Citizens as Shapers. Citizens as Shapers, that's quite hard to say. Citizens as Shapers is sponsored by Twitter and asks students to design a solution that harnesses digital tools to increase the quality, quantity and quality of citizens' participation in democratic processes. The brief was an exciting new collaboration. For the first time this year, we invited the RSA Student Design Awards alumni community to propose a brief topic and vote on the suggestions. Citizens as Shapers was the winning topic submitted by Thomas Wassling and Ethan Howard and supported through a new partnership with Twitter. And the winner is Lucy Davidson. Lucy's from Kingston University and the solution is Boy, a service that utilises increasing levels of internet and smartphone usage amongst homeless people, connecting them with politicians and UK Parliament via forums and reformed voting system for those with no fixed address. The panel were extremely impressed by Lucy's solution, which embedded a systemic approach to a complex and sensitive issue. She undertook an in-depth process of design research and created a solution that tackles multiple parts of the problem, providing a platform to a large yet underrepresented group of citizens. Fourth brief, Beyond the Kitchen Table. Beyond the Kitchen Table is sponsored by Blom UK, Blanco Symphony, Kessel Bomber and the Kitchen Education Trust, with in-kind support from the National Innovation Centre for Ageing. The brief asks students to develop an inclusive kitchen product or spatial solution that enables people of diverse ages and needs to prepare and eat food, entertain, engage in hobbies or work and enjoy life together. So we've got three winners for this brief. Sarah Alba is from the University of the Arts London and Central St Martins for Touchpoint, a plate and bowl designed for people with ADHD to direct their focus onto the food they are eating through tactile stimuli. Touchpoint creates a comfort and confidence to eat in company and helps prevent eating disorders. The judges were very impressed by Sarah's detailed research and excellent presentation skills. They commented that with Touchpoint, Sarah has designed a lifestyle-changing way of eating. Coming up together, and we're going to do a big round. Congratulations. Further winner, Louis Farnsworth from De Montfort University for CORE, a range of kitchen safety knives designed to protect users from cuts and lacerations. The CORE range is intended to boost confidence among visually impaired people and users of diverse ages within the kitchen environment. The judges appreciated the passion, time and determination that Louis poured into the solution. He presented multiple impressive prototypes and created a product that would improve the kitchen experience for people with different needs. done. I'm Ben Capern from the University of West of England. Tilt, a new stabilising mixing bowl aiding cake preparation for those with low dexterity. Tilt offers independence to both children and impaired parents, allowing them to complete recipes and share a more enjoyable bonding experience through cooking together. The panel congratulated Ben for his fantastic solution that solves a big problem for a range of people with disabilities, as well as those that have suffered from stroke or amputation. The judges were impressed with his interactive presentation, which included live cake making. I can't believe I missed that one. Congratulations. Well done. Brief 5, Alone Together, sponsored by the Marketing Trust with additional support from the Chartered Institute of Marketing, accounting for how different groups in societies are affected by loneliness. This brief asks students to design a way to reduce its impact on one or more of the following: physical health, mental health, or access to services. And so we have 2 winners this evening. We have Faye Sedgwick from Northumbria University for Soften the Traces of Time, an intergenerational living scheme for older people in Newcastle facing the challenges of social segregation, loneliness, and maintaining independence. The judges were blown away by Faye's level of research and personal investment in this project, including ethnographic research living in an intergenerational community in the Netherlands. They commented that it's a solution that demonstrates great design execution and commercial awareness, celebrates heritage, and promotes well-being for people from different age groups. And Elliot Butler from Loughborough University for Cove. A safe digital environment for young carers to meet, share experiences and advice, accompanied by a haptic sensory wearable to enable young carers to keep in touch with their relative at home, providing them with reassurance and confidence to expand their social circle. The panel was impressed by Elliot's well-executed solution, which embodies an understanding of the emotional experience of his target audience and showed great consideration of a set of important user touch points. Well done. You guys okay over there? Brief 6, Harvesting Health, is supported by RSA Food, Farming and Countryside Commission, which is funded by Esme Fairbairn Foundation, with additional support from NCR. The brief asks students to design a product, system or service which uses sustainable food and farming to help improve people's health or well-being. So we've got 3 winning projects here. We have Scarlett Pugh and Jessica Coleman from Kingston University for The Moving Market, a non-profit organisation that brings local farm produce closer to you by purchasing farmers' produce at a fair price and selling it via a mobile market, which operates a circular route in rural areas. The system provides temporary employment for job seekers and educates the local community about seasonal produce. The panel was impressed by Scarlett and Jessica's fantastic execution and passionate presentation. They said, "The Moving Market answers the big systemic questions about connecting producers, farmers and citizens whilst providing all the benefits associated with that." Lewis Totti from Sheffield Hallam University. Winner, Food That Matters, a workshop-based program that builds confidence and mental well-being amongst students through food education. The judging panel loved Lewis's thoughtful yet ambitious approach to the brief. They were particularly impressed by the future workshops that have already been planned and all agreed that this is just the beginning of a great initiative. Kai Wang from Brunel University, London, for Potluck, a combined cooking and storage device that helps people make stock cubes from avoidable food waste in a simple way. Also, I love this. The judges were impressed by Kai's remarkable thought process and impressive presentation. They also commented on his excellent business model exploration and clear product iterations, which were visible through a range of prototypes, including high-fidelity models. Kai. Brief 7, Hidden Figures. Hidden Figures is sponsored by the Office for Disability Issues with additional support from Kinnear DeFort. The brief asks students to design a way to break down the physical, organisational or attitudinal barriers that people with hidden disabilities or impairments can face in society to enable them to live their lives in full. And we have two winners, Emma Sutcliffe from Loughborough University for Travelease, a system that enables independent use of public transportation for young adults with autism spectrum disorders. It provides the user with consecutive short instructions in an accessible format and reassures the carer or parent that providing discrete feedback through a wearable. According to the panel, Emma delivered the best work in the best way. Emma managed to gain great understanding of a target audience, identified latent behaviours and showed a strong sense of awareness of the project barriers. The judges commented that Travelease is a practical solution which is full of delight. And we also have Ima Fitzpatrick, Grace Hickey, Kate McCauley from Dunleary Institute of Art, Design and Technology, Republic of Ireland, for Unseen, an awareness campaign for all hidden disabilities that aims to bring visibility back to people via a discreet wearable asterisk symbol. The panel described their campaign as an exquisitely presented piece of graphics and applauded the project for its great level of simplicity and coherence. Unseen is elegant, creative and engaging. Brief 8, Take Leave. Second challenge topic this year that was crowdsourced from our alumni community, and this brief was supported by legacy funds for the RSA. Past winner Tom Tobia developed this brief, which asked students to design a system, service or campaign to encourage or enable parents, employers or society more widely to embrace shared parental leave. We have two winning projects for this brief. Hamza Kacheri, Riley Nicholas and Frank Marvin from the University of Bristol. For Mentor.me, a system designed to temporarily replace parents taking shared parental leave with unemployed or underemployed graduates seeking quality work experience. The jury was impressed by the way the team thoroughly developed their solution and tested it from different perspectives, employers, parents and graduates, and mapped those experiences along each other. The team solved two difficult challenges, managing to meet and balance personal and business needs. Guys. And Hannah Pivaneva from the University of Lincoln for Early Parental Plan, EPP, a system solution that integrates with the workplace pension. Early Parental Plan enables people who may want to have children in the future to save in advance so that if, when they become a parent, they can take shared parental leave without having to worry about finances. The judges were really impressed by Hannah's in-depth approach to understanding the subject, the current system, and wider socio-economic context. They said this is an ambitious solution that has great potential. EPP would be a seamless intervention into the lives of all parents. Brief 9, Living and Dying Well. Living and Dying Well is one of two animation briefs this year sponsored by NHS England. It asks students to conceive and produce an animation to clarify and illuminate the audio content provided, which explores why talking about illness and planning for death is important for people affected by serious health conditions. And the winner is Emma McKell from the Arts University of Bournemouth for Passing Conversations. It's an animation that brings to life everyday inanimate objects facing fears and concerns in the run-up to death, aiming to encourage a more positive approach to this challenging subject in a light-hearted and playful manner. The judges commended Emma's charming and engaging approach to the difficult subject of dying. They said Emma made it easy for us to relate to her well-chosen characters who have universal appeal and the ability to speak to people of all ages. And I believe we're going to show Emma's animation.
The prospect of dying from a serious illness can be scary. But what is it that's most scary? For some people, it's about what death means and what they believe happens afterwards, or what they imagine the process of dying to be like. For others, what matters most is the prospect of losing control as they become more unwell. Sometimes, when people are ill, their loved ones avoid the subject for fear of upsetting them. That can make it all even more scary and lonely. There are ways to make things a little better. Voicing fears and concerns aloud can provide a sense of relief. Planning for the future and thinking and talking about a time when you're going to be less well, including when you're dying, means that your hopes and views can guide decisions about your treatment, care and support. Those who love and care for you will be more reassured that they know what matters to you instead of having to guess. If you can talk, you can take more control over what's happening to your health and your life.
Absolutely gorgeous, isn't it? Fabulous, love it. And the final brief is moving pictures. So our final brief from this year's competition is a collaboration with RSA Events with additional support from NatraCare. We asked students to conceive and produce an animation to accompany one of the two selective audio files that will clarify, energise and illuminate the content. And we have three winners for this. Arthur Cairns from Birmingham City University. I love pirates, how to be more pirate. It's an animation that illuminates how to be more pirate, portraying the concept through watercolour illustrations that showcase a miserable character journeying through the daily routine and then shifting to a different lifestyle. The panel commended Arthur's visual narrative, which brought a third dimension to the audio. They applauded his work for having a lot of heart, experimentation and optimism. We have Julen Goni from the Edinburgh College of Art for The Future is in Your Hands Now, an animation that illuminates how to be more pirate through a witty and friendly purple and pink characters as the younger generation pushing for change in society. The judges commended Julen's well-executed piece, which they said had managed to cleverly represent emotions, wit and humour through great character design. And finally, Leanne Dooley from Limerick School of Art and Design, The Shape of Sexism. It's an animation that illuminates everyday sexism, showing the contrast in opportunities for men and women through illustrated characters and texts that flow and shift to represent maps, media apps and newspapers. The judges were captivated by Leanne's work as they described it as a very clever piece of visual thinking, and they love the colour palette she uses in the animation. I'd like to doubly congratulate Leanne tonight, as in addition to being selected as a winner by the panel, she also won the RSA Staff Choice Award, which was chosen by the majority vote of RSA staff from all the shortlisted animations. There are three great animations we could show you, but I'm afraid we can't show you them all, but big award for Leanne. You're getting really squashed over there, aren't
so
you?
So often when I talk about these issues, I come up against this argument. Sexism doesn't really exist anymore in the UK. Look elsewhere. Look at other countries around the world. And there is this real sense women here are making a fuss about things that aren't real problems. And I think that we have to sometimes stop and reflect on the fact that actually we are still living in a country where fewer than a third of our elected MPs are women, only about a fifth of the membership of the House of Lords. Anywhere there are decisions being made that impact on our lives on a daily basis, they're being made by usually older white men. In terms of the way that the world is framed for us, the news that we consume on a daily basis, the front pages that shape the way that we react to what's going on, just over a fifth of them are written by women, and 84% of them are about a male subject or expert. So in ways that we don't even realise, these things are trickling down. There is so much that's baked into our society around us, and it's all about seeing those normalised things that we've been told for such a long time. You just have to put up with this. It's just the way things are. Well, it's not anymore, and it's time to say enough's enough.
I do apologise for that. Phew. That brings us to the end of our awards tonight. A massive congratulations to all the 2019 winners, and a huge thank you again to our sponsors, judges, educators and supporters of the RSA Student Design Awards, and to all the students who participated this year and who are using their design skills in positive, impactful in designing our futures. You've only had a small snapshot of the winning work here tonight, but you can find out more about the winning projects and the finalists on our website, and do, of course, also chat to the people behind these solutions in person tonight. In a few minutes, we're heading downstairs to the Benjamin Franklin Room, just below, to continue the celebrations over a drink, so please join us. Before we close out formal proceedings, our class of 2019 will join a remarkable network of alumni across the globe and spanning different generations, disciplines and sectors, and we can't wait to see the things that you go on to do. Started with a story. I'd like to wrap up with one about a designer that I've been truly inspired by. For those that don't know, Bill Moggridge. Bill Moggridge is an absolute titan of design. He very, very sadly passed away in 2012, but his legacy really does live on. Bill designed the first laptop in 1982. I don't think that's too shabby. That's pretty cool, right? He was a co-founder of IDEO, not too shabby. He pioneered interaction design and was one of the first people to integrate human factors into the design of software and hardware in the world. Not too shabby. You know where I'm going with this. Bill subsequently went on to become one of the most respected voices about design in the world. Not too shabby. For me, this guy was a titan out in the world, but he was also a titan in my world. Bill's inspiring, humble, charming, smart, kind, and I could go on and on with the superlatives. But because of this guy and a few others like him, I've had the most incredible experiences of my life for many years in design. But here's the thing that you may not know. Bill was an SDA award winner half a century ago. And he credited this award with giving him the courage to co-found IDEO. So for the winners tonight, I just wanted to say, you are now officially standing on the shoulders of a design titan. Your legacy, as Matthew said earlier, starts right now. So absolutely no pressure, guys. I get the wine in. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, head to our YouTube channel for inspiring talks, interviews, and animations.